G3. The Model of Being and Its Universal Laws. Number 1B.
Now, what about mind? Well, at that time they felt mind is just matter, that matter produces mind. They didn't know how, but they said, our scientists, they said, well, we have not found it out, but later centuries will find it out. So they had just a one materialistic universe where everything was built on the concept of matter, which produces also mind. That was the basis. Another point of the old science, which is very natural to us and absolutely wrong, is that they used the method of reductionism. They reduced everything to parts. They took the whole and said the whole is combined of parts, and if we can analyze the whole and dissect it 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 until we come to the last indivisible part, then we have found the last building block of reality. And so they tried that, and that is what happened then. They tried to analyze, as you know, matter down to molecules, to atoms, to electrons, etc., etc., always to smaller and smaller parts. So with the intention, naturally, to find the ultimate elements of reality. Now, physics did that, as I said, by reducing it to atoms and electrons, etc. In the realm of chemistry, they tried to do the same thing. They tried to reduce all chemical combinations to the chemical elements, the chemical table? The periodic table in chemistry. And the same in biology. They reduced everything to cells, and now today even to smaller parts. In philosophy, they tried to take the same method and said, how can we reduce and reduce until they came like Leibniz to the concept of monads, that the building blocks of psychology are monads. Monads were the expression for what we would call today ideas, that were the last simple building blocks of reality. Unfortunately, Leibniz didn't follow up that whole idea, as I will show later on. Also, in psychology, you had the same thing. Freud, as the founder of psychology, of modern psychology, he tried also to reduce, to reduce, to reduce, until he came to the building block of the psyche as the what he called the id or the ego. And Jung called it perhaps archetypal concept. So you can see that whole old science had the method of trying to take the whole and to try to understand the whole by splitting it up into fragments and fragments, dividing, 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 to find out the last, smallest, indivisible building block. Naturally, they never really succeeded, as we'll see later on. So, why did they do that? And that's interesting, because modern Christian scientists make the same mistake. Why did they do that? They believed, and it seemed to be quite reasonable for the average people, and even for today's people, it seems quite reasonable, that they felt, well, if we take the whole, whatever the whole is, be it the body or whatever, if we take the whole and dissect it to its smallest indivisible parts, then we can explain how the smallest parts behaves. We can see the laws of the smallest parts. Then, consequently, the aggregation of all those smallest parts and the behavior of all the smallest parts gives then the solution for the whole, and that seemed to be very logical for the people, and for us perhaps also, that we feel, well, the whole consists of parts, so if we understand the behavior of the parts, we can also understand the behavior of the whole by just aggregating, accumulating parts upon parts upon parts, and then find the answer for the whole. So the whole, they try to explain by the behavior of their parts. Just make a mental note of that, because we'll see that we try to do that in Christian Science practice only too often, and this is because we all believe still in the old science and have not awoken to the new science that actually Mrs. Eddy gives, but it has not been recognized as such. Another important aspect of the old science was the mechanism and the mechanical concept of the universe, and that mechanical concept that could be built into mathematical laws could be dealt with through the laws of cause and effect. That every cause has an effect, there is no effect without having had a cause before. And we believe that, and each one who sits here has been thinking that way his lifetime, though it was absolutely wrong. And if you are shocked, please shocked. I'm glad if you are shocked. That's what I want to do. That we have to shock ourselves out of our boots and see that we have to wear other boots. The new science, which showing us completely different fundamentals and different laws. So that whole mechanical explanation of cause and effect was the main basis on which every science built, no matter if it was physics or chemistry or psychology or whatever, or biology, has the disadvantage that it is always considering a closed system, that it's always beginning somewhere and ending somewhere, beginning with cause and ending with effect, and so it was a closed system. And because it was a closed system, it was an isolated system. And we have said the world is one world, it's not isolated, nothing can anymore be isolated, and you can see right away that that old science must have been wrong, right on the basis of that closed system theory. So the environment was not taken into consideration, nor was the observer taken into consideration. In the law of cause and effect, the observer doesn't play its a part at all. He is excluded from that law of cause and effect as irrelevant. And now today we see that is absolutely wrong, that actually the environment is relevant and that the observer, man, is relevant. Because if we go on like this to destroy the environment, we also go to destroy the observer, man. And so we see how the old concept of science was absolutely, completely wrong. Again, thinking about this old science, we can see that the method that physics, for instance, accepted as first science, was then afterwards imitated or taken over, adopted by all the other sciences. And that alone by itself is a great mistake, that because physics that had to do with dead matter, with mechanical matter, was very successful. Think of the technology, think of the industrial age, what that has brought forth, all the comfort we have, the material comfort it has brought forth, that is all brought forth on the old concept of science, and that was very successful in dead matter. But it has been taken over by those sciences that have to do with living matter, with organic matter. It has been taken over by psychology, by the mental science, by the life sciences. And all these sciences made then the great mistake to rely on the insight that the natural scientists have won on in the subject of dead matter. So they tried to use it for living organisms, And this is a great mistake. It's applying a method in a, to another field that has nothing to do with the old field in which it has been discovered. So this great mistake has its effect today very much, and has also brought forth another great disadvantage, namely the fragmentation of all the sciences through the splitting up of the whole into parts. Also, the sciences have been split up, or science has been split up in sciences, in many sciences, and in every science you have the specialization and the fragmentation, so that one science didn't know anymore what the scientist in another field of science was doing, and therefore there was a splitting apart of the whole into fragments, and you can never put fragments together and make a whole. That doesn't work. If we take a watch and take a good big hammer and smash the watch and get into fragments, we never can build it together again as a working watch. And that's what happened in the various sciences. We had the specialization, and so that finally a specialist knew a very lot about nothing. And so the whole, the sense of wholeness really got lost. Now, the new scientists, just to bring in a few quotes, the new scientists are very hard on the specialists. I just quote from Schrödinger, that well-known physical scientist who worked together with Einstein. He, for instance, said on specialization, he said that specialization is not a virtue, but an unavoidable evil. It's unavoidable, but it's evil. The isolated knowledge obtained by a group of specialists in a narrow field has no value whatsoever, but only in its synthesis with all the rest of knowledge. See, so he adds, after the comma, he adds, so to say, what the new scientist asks to do. And he says, all right, a specialist is no good at all, because he only knows his own field and has no knowledge of the whole. He cannot really see the problem from the whole. He only sees the problem from the parts. And he's only good if he builds in his specialized knowledge into the knowledge, as what he says, of the whole. Then it is valuable. So he says the price of specialization is sterility. And I say that because after 3 or 4 days, when I speak perhaps about Christian Science practice, I can come back to that specialization and show how sterile Christian Science practice can become if we are not watchful about our basis and about the ground, our fundamentals on which we practice Christian Science. Yes. That's an overall view of the old science. Now, I said in the 20th century we have the first science that a new concept of science broke in on the old science. That those 3 centuries before suddenly began to be shaken up, because one began to see completely new aspects of science. You remember how it is said that the teacher of Max Planck said at the end of last century to him, when he was a student, he said, you know, if you study physics, there is actually very little left you can investigate and write a thesis about physics, because practically everything has been discovered and has been understood. That was at the end of last century. And you know how exactly then Max Planck was one of those who was breaking away from the old science. But before I do that, I want to introduce historically what really happened, and then you begin to see the import of the new science. I said, whereas in the old science, matter was substance, and matter was a mechanical law, or was governed by mechanical laws that could be expressed through mathematical symbols, and mind was just an offshoot of matter, which one day will be explained as such, where the observer could be left out, that the observer had to be neglected, that the sense testimony which we get from an object is anyway, as we know, not right, is wrong. So those three fundamental concepts of mind, matter, and sense testimony, these were at that time under investigation, and was seen that the observer actually has no role in science. And this changed in the year 1905 with Einstein, when he gave the theory of special relativity. Here he showed that actually physics had to be remolded, rethought, and that the observer was playing a big part in physics, that it depended a lot of the standpoint of the observer what kind of a reality he would see. So suddenly the mind aspect entered into physics again. The observer, the one who thinks, the subjective sense entered into physics, because Einstein would show that the observer is important, that according to from where we look at something, the world looks to be different. I don't have to explain that, most know that, and the others who don't know it doesn't matter. The main point is that you notice that suddenly we step by step get away from the purely materialistic world view and take in a subjective part into that worldview. It even changed much more 20 years later when Heisenberg was bringing in the quantum mechanics. It doesn't matter if you know what quantum mechanics is, it doesn't matter at all. It matters only what I explain, that he began to see that the observer is even more important than what Einstein even felt was important, that the observer changes, that it is the observer that changes the universe, that according to how we, as people, as thinking people, build up an experiment, we find a new universe. That we could find matter not only as particles, but also as a wave of probability. Well, particles and a wave of probabilities are two very different things. The one is much more materialistic, the other is already metaphysical. And so he showed that through the quantum mechanics, that really the observer is of greatest importance. He goes further and then shows what has been shown, that actually, therefore, the observer cannot be separated anymore from the observed, that there is no more a line of demarcation between the observer and the observed world, that there is no separation between the subject and the object, there's no separation between the way we look at it and the object we see, that is no more a dualistic sense, but they are one. That he says that therefore that line of demarcation is a barrier that we have built that never existed, that distinction between the subject and object is an artificial line of demarcation which we have invented but does not exist in reality, therefore that object and subject are one, Well, today, you know, if you read a little bit the papers, you know about Wheeler, the father of the black holes. He goes further and says, well, he's not only an observer, he even overforms it or elevates it to a participator of the universe. He said the observer is a participant of the universe. He's not outside of the universe, looking at the universe. He coined that term that we have a participatory universe. Did I put it right? That we have a participatory universe, a universe in which we participate, where we are one with the universe, not divided. And somehow something rings in your ear, principle and idea is one. Creator and creation is one. Somehow that rings in it. And so today, in this last 10-20 years, Wheeler has brought out that point, which is bringing, so to say, a man constantly nearer to God, or brings the subject to be one with the object, participating in the universe. So he says, for instance, and you just notice it, you don't have to write it down, he said that knowledge, we are all out for knowledge, that knowledge is a fact about both the knower and the object known. So that knowledge is not something that we have, but that knowledge is a fact about both the knower and the object known, because it's a participatory universe. And you begin to feel stronger and stronger the absolute unity that exists in the one world. That one world cannot be split up in object and subject, that cannot be split up in God and man, in universe and man, and so on. Well, that is an important point. But still, what is that observer? He observes with his mind. He observes with his eyes. Yes, we know that, but we have known that since the Greeks, that the eye testimony, the sense testimony, is anyway wrong and has to be corrected through science. But what about the mind of the observer? And here again you can see that the new science has made quite an advance, that during the last 10 years or 12 years or so, starting with the experiment in the field of neurophysiology and neurochirurgy surgery, neurosurgery, they have found out, like Sherrington, like Penfield, Eccles, they have found out that mind, small m naturally, that mind is independent of the brain. That mind has nothing to do with the brain. That mind is not in the brain. They have found out that it is not of matter. That mind has not the nature of matter, does not need matter. That mind is a non-material reality, that it exists besides matter, besides the brain. That it is, as they call, a self-conscious mind. Mind, small m, still, naturally. But it's self-conscious mind. That it understands on its own, doesn't need any brain for it. It makes decision and puts them into effect. So mind uses the brain, not the brain brings forth mind, but mind can use the brain. So it is an it. It is something by itself. Now this answers an age-old question about mind and matter. So new science has brought back matter to the point of energy, energy as a field of energy. Matter is therefore no more substance as we used to think about it. Mind now is explained as being an entity by itself, not dependent on brain. And if it is independent on brain, mind, then you can quite see that it is deathless. That mind is not dependent on the body. on the brain. So we can burn up the brain and the body, but mind is not burned up by it. Mind lives on. So they certainly begin to see that they have the key for a completely new field, for that field which says that there is no death, that mind lives on. That not only that, that if there is no death, then mind knows the past, the present, and the future. Then mind, because it is not limited to matter, has no limitation, therefore it's not limited to past, nor present, nor future. Therefore, it is becomes absolutely scientific to investigate all those paranormal phenomena that we knew, like knowing the past, reading the past, telepathy, telekinetics, and so on. It becomes absolutely normal. So there will no more be paranormal phenomena, much more, they will become very normal phenomena. Only that they have not been investigated up to now. So that they feel that finally all that they say, that now scientists can now believe in the existence of spirit. And so they introduce the possibility of spirit as being really the fundamental substance for a science of spirit. I have not time to read a few references, so I will just elaborate a moment or two on it and go on tomorrow. So you see that if in this transitionary stage in which we are in, we are not yet in the new science, but we are in the transitionary stage in the 20th century between that old science and the new science that is coming and is just waiting around the corner to be discovered clearer and better. We see already now that the door is open, wide open, for a completely new science, where science that is built on the divine mind, that therefore looks through the grid of the divine mind and sees only what is real, namely spirit. Therefore they begin to see that all that there is actually substantial. It's only the spiritual. They say only that which is spiritual is absolutely the true and is of true value. So that spiritual is only true. Matter is no more true. Something rings the bell of the scientific statement of being. There is no intelligence, no substance, no life, no truth in matter. See, at that point, new science has arrived. And so that would also give a new sense of man, namely, as what they say, that he's just a conscious agent of the spiritual, the good, the harmonious, and the eternal. And in this way, new science has accomplished what? It has actually transcended or translated, so to say, materialism out of itself and has transcended itself into a spiritual universe, or let's say at the moment into a mental universe, which is very dangerous by itself. Yes. Okay. Tomorrow I go on and show the new science.